Chapter 6 Of the White Bull and the Komarinsky Peasant. Before I have the honour of presenting the reader with Foma Fomitch in person, I think it is absolutely essential to say a few words about Falalei, and to explain what there was terrible in the fact of his dancing the Komarinsky, and Foma Fomitch's finding him engaged in that light-hearted diversion. Falalei was a house serf boy, an orphan from the cradle, and a godson of my uncle's late wife. My uncle was very fond of him. That fact alone was quite sufficient to make Foma Fomitch, after he had settled at Stepanchikovo and gained complete domination over my uncle, take a dislike to the latter's favourite, Falalei. But Madame la Générale took a particular fancy to the boy, who, in spite of Foma Fomitch's wrath, remained upstairs, in attendance on the family. Madame la Générale herself insisted upon it, and Foma gave way, storing up the injury—he looked on everything as an injury—in his heart, and revenging it on every favourable occasion on my uncle, who was in no way responsible. Falalei was wonderfully good-looking. He had a girlish face, the face of a beautiful peasant girl. Madame la Générale petted and spoiled him, prized him as though he were a rare and pretty toy, and there was no saying which she loved best, a little curly black dog Ami or Falalei. We have already referred to his costume, which was her idea. The young ladies gave him pomatum, and it was the duty of the barber Kuzma to curl his hair on holidays. This boy was a strange creature. He could not be called a perfect idiot or imbecile, but he was so naive, so truthful and simple-hearted, that he might sometimes be certainly taken for a fool. If he had a dream, he would go at once to tell it to his master or mistress. He joined in the conversation of the gentlefolk without caring whether he was interrupting them. He would tell them things quite impossible to tell gentlefolks. He would dissolve into the most genuine tears when his mistress fell into a swoon or when his master was too severely scolded. He sympathized with every sort of distress. He would sometimes go up to Madame la Générale, kiss her hands, and beg her not to be cross, and the old lady would magnanimously forgive him these audacities. He was sensitive in the extreme, kind-hearted, as free from malice as a lamb, and as gay as a happy child. They gave him dainties from the dinner table. He always stood behind Madame la Générale's chair, and was awfully fond of sugar. When he was given a lump of sugar, he would nibble at it with his strong, milk-white teeth, and a gleam of indescribable pleasure shone in his merry blue eyes and all over his pretty little face. For a long time Foma Fomitch raged, but, reflecting at last that he would get nothing by anger, he suddenly made up his mind to be Falalei's benefactor. After first pitching into my uncle for doing nothing for the education of the house serfs, he determined at once to set about training the poor boy in morals, good manners, and French. "What?" he would say in defence of his absurd idea, an idea not confined to Foma Fomitch, as the writer of these lines can testify.
"What? He's always upstairs, waiting on his mistress. One day, forgetting that he does not know French, she will say to him, for instance, 'Donnez-moi mon mouchard.' He ought to be equal to the occasion, and able to do his duty even then."
But it appeared not only that it was impossible to teach Falalei French, but that the cook, Andron, the boy's uncle, who had disinterestedly tried to teach him to read Russian, had long ago given it up in despair and put the alphabet away on the shelf. Falalei was so dull at book-learning that he could understand absolutely nothing. Moreover, this led to further trouble. The house serfs began calling Falalei in derision a Frenchman, and old Gavrila, my uncle's valet, openly ventured to deny the usefulness of learning French. This reached Foma Fomitch's ears, and bursting with wrath, he made his opponent, Gavrila, himself learn French as a punishment. This was the origin of the whole business of teaching the servants French, which so exasperated Mr. Batcheyev. It was still worse in regard to manners. Foma was absolutely unable to train Falalet to suit his ideas, and, in spite of his prohibition, the boy would go in to tell him his dreams in the morning, which Foma Fomitch considered extremely ill-mannered and familiar. But Falalet obstinately remained Falalet. My uncle was, of course, the first to suffer for all this.
Do you know what he has done today?
Foma would exclaim, selecting a moment when all were gathered together in order to produce a greater sensation.
Do you know what your systematic spoiling is coming to? Today he gobbled up a piece of pie given him at the table, and you know what he said of it? Come here, silly fool, come here, idiot, come here, red face.
Falalet would come up, weeping, and rubbing his eyes with both hands.
"What did you say when you greedily ate up your pie? Repeat it before everyone."
Falalet would dissolve in bitter tears and make no answer.
"Then I'll speak for you, if that's how it is. You said, slapping yourself on your stuffed and vulgar stomach, "I've gobbled up the pie as Martin did the soap." Oh, upon my word, Colonel, can expressions like that be used in educated society, still more in aristocratic society? Did you say it or not? Speak!
I did, Falalet would assent, sobbing.
Well then, tell me now, does Martin eat soap? Where have you seen a Martin who eats soap? Tell me, give me an idea of this phenomenal Martin.
Silence.
I am asking you, Foma would persist, who is this Martin? I want to see him. I want to make his acquaintance. Well, what is he? A registry clerk? An astronomer? A provincial? A poet? An army captain? A serving man? He must have been something. Answer!
A serving man,
Falalet would answer at last, still weeping.
Whose? Who is his master?
But Falalet was utterly unable to say who was his master. It would end, of course, in Foma Fomitch's rushing out of the room in a passion, crying out that he had been insulted. Madame la Générale would show symptoms of an attack, while my uncle would curse the hour of his birth, beg everybody's pardon, and, for the rest of the day, walk about on tiptoe in his own rooms. As ill luck would have it, on the day after the trouble over Martin and the soap, Falalet, who had succeeded in completely forgetting about Martin and all his woes of the previous day, informed Foma Fomitch, as he took in his tea in the morning, that he had had a dream about a white bull. This was the last straw. Foma Fomitch was moved to indescribable indignation. He promptly summoned my uncle and began upbraiding him for the vulgarity of the dream dreamed by his Falalet. This time severe steps were taken. Falalet was punished. He had to kneel down in the corner. He was sternly forbidden to dream of such coarse, rustic subjects.
"What I am angry at," said Foma, "apart from the fact that he really ought not to dare to think of blurting out his dreams to me, especially a dream of a white bull, apart from that, you must agree, Colonel, what is the white bull but a proof of coarseness, ignorance, and loutishness in your unkempt Falalet? As the thoughts are, so will the dreams be. Did I not tell you before that you would never make anything of him, and that he ought not to remain upstairs waiting upon the family? You will never, never develop that senseless peasant soul into anything lofty or poetical. Can't you manage?"
he went on, addressing Falalet.
"Can't you manage to dream of something elegant, refined, genteel, some scene from good society, such as gentlemen playing cards or ladies walking in a lovely garden?"
Falalet promised he would be sure to dream next night of gentlemen or ladies walking in a lovely garden. As he went to bed, Falalet prayed tearfully on the subject, and wondered for a long time what he could do so as not to dream of the accursed white bull. But deceitful are the hopes of man. On waking up next morning, he remembered with horror that he had again been dreaming all night of the hateful white bull, and had not dreamed of even one lady walking in a lovely garden. This time the consequences were singular. Fomar Fomitch positively declared that he did not believe in the possibility of such a coincidence, the possibility of such a repetition of a dream, and that Falalet was prompted to say this by someone of the household, perhaps even by the colonel himself, on purpose to annoy Fomar Fomitch. There was no end of an uproar, tears, and reproaches. Madame la Générale was taken ill towards the evening. The whole household wore a dejected air. There was still a faint hope that the following, that is, the third night, Falalet would be sure to have some dream of refined society. What was the universal indignation when, for a whole week, every blessed night, Falalet went on dreaming of the white bull, and nothing but the white bull. It was no use even to think of refined society. But the most interesting point was that Falalet was utterly incapable of thinking of lying, of simply saying that he had dreamed not of the white bull, but of a carriage, for instance, full of ladies and Fomar Fomitch. This was all the more strange, since lying indeed would not have been so very sinful in so extreme a case. But Falalet was so truthful that he positively could not tell a lie even if he wanted to. It was indeed not even suggested to him by anyone. They all knew that he would betray himself at the first moment, and Fomar Fomitch would immediately detect him in lying. What was to be done? My uncle's position was becoming intolerable. Falalet was absolutely incorrigible. The poor boy was positively growing thinner from worry. The housekeeper, Malagna, declared that he was bewitched, and sprinkled him with magic water. She was assisted in this compassionate and salutary operation by the tender-hearted Praskovya Ilyinichna, but even that was no use. Nothing was of use.
"The deuce take the damn thing!" Falalet said. "The same dream every night. Every evening, I pray, don't let me dream of the white bull, don't let me dream of the white bull. And there it is! There it is, the damned beast facing me, huge with horns and such thick lips. Oh!"
My uncle was in despair, but luckily Fomar Fomitch seemed all at once to have forgotten about the white bull. Of course, no one believed that Fomar Fomitch could forget a circumstance so important. Everyone assumed with terror that he was keeping the white bull in reserve and would bring it out on the first suitable occasion. It appeared later on that Fomar Fomitch had no thoughts to spare for the white bull at that moment. He had other business in hand, other cares. Other plans were maturing in his beneficent and fertile brain. That is why he let Falalet breathe in peace, and everyone else, too, had a respite. The boy grew gay again, and even began to forget what had happened. Even the white bull began to visit him less and less frequently, though it still at times reminded him of its fantastic existence. In fact, everything would have gone well if there had been no such thing as the Komarinsky. It must be noted that Falalet was an excellent dancer. Dancing was his chief accomplishment, even something like his vocation. He danced with vigour, with inexhaustible gaiety, and he was particularly fond of dancing the Komarinsky peasant. Not that he was so much attracted by the frivolous and in any case inexplicable steps of that volatile peasant. No, he liked dancing the Komarinsky solely because to hear the Komarinsky and not dance to the tune was utterly beyond him. Sometimes in the evenings, two or three of the footmen, the coachmen, the gardener who played the fiddle, and even some of the ladies of the servants' hall, would gather together in a circle in some back yard as far away as possible from Foma Fomitch. Music and dances would begin, and finally the Komarinsky would triumphantly come into its own. The orchestra consisted of two balalaikas, a guitar, a fiddle and a tambourine, with which the postillion Mityushka was a capital hand. Falilei's condition was worth watching at such times. He would dance to complete oblivion of himself, to utter exhaustion, encouraged by the shouts and laughter of his audience. He would squeal, shout, laugh, clap his hands. He danced as though carried away by some intangible outside force with which he could not cope, and he struggled persistently to keep up with the continually increasing pace of the reckless tune as he tapped on the ground with his heels. These were minutes of real delight to him, and everything would have gone happily and merrily if rumours of the Komarinsky had not at last reached Foma Fomitch. Foma Fomitch was petrified and sent at once for the colonel.
"There is only one thing I wish to learn from you," Foma began. "Have you positively sworn to be the ruin of that luckless idiot or not? In the first case I will stand aside at once. If not, then I—"
"But what is the matter? What has happened?" cried my uncle, alarmed.
"You ask what has happened? Do you know that he is dancing the Komarinsky?"
Well, what of it?
"Well, what of it?" shrieked Foma. "And you say that you, their master, standing in a sense in the place of their father, but have you then a true idea of what the Komarinsky is? Do you know that that song describes a debauched peasant attempting in a state of drunkenness the most immoral action? Do you know what sacrilege it is that vicious little Russian is committing? He is trampling upon the most precious bonds, and so to say, stamping them under his big loutish boots, accustomed to tread only the floor of the village inn. And do you realize that you have wounded my moral feelings by your answer? Do you realize that you have insulted me personally by your answer? Do you understand that or not?"
"But, Foma, why, it's only a song, Foma."
"You say only a song, and you are not ashamed that you own to me that you know that song. You, a member of honourable society, the father of honourable innocent children, and a colonel into the bargain. Only a song? But I am certain that the song is drawn from real life. Only a song? But what decent man can, without a blush of shame, admit that he knows that song, that he has ever heard that song? What man could?"
"Well, but you see, you know it yourself, Foma, since you ask about it," my disconcerted uncle answered, in the simplicity of his heart.
"What? I know it! I you have insulted me!"
Foma Fomitch cried at once, leaping up from his chair and spluttering with fury. He had never expected such a crushing answer. I will not undertake to describe the wrath of Foma Fomitch. The colonel was ignominiously driven from the presence of the guardian of morality for the ill manners and tactlessness of his reply. But from that hour Foma Fomitch vowed to catch Falilei in the act of dancing the Komarinsky. In the evening, when everyone supposed he was busy at work, he stole out into the garden, went the round of the kitchen garden, and threaded his way into the hemp patch, from which there was a view in the distance of the back yard in which the dances took place. He stalked poor Fallalay as a sportsman stalks a bird, picturing with relish the wigging he would, if he succeeded, give the whole household, and the colonel in particular. His unwearying efforts were at last crowned with success. He had come upon the Komarinsky. It will be understood now why my uncle tore his hair when he saw Fallalay weeping and heard Vidopliasov announce Foma Fomitch, who so unexpectedly and at such a moment of perturbation was standing before us in person.